The Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
Clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. That's pretty much sums up Jimmy Bartel, Triple Premiership player, Brownlow MLS, Norm Smith medals. Boy, God, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, gentlemen. I've just gone and got the fly fishing rod ready from out of the garage, and I'm just going to drop a line in the gutter in Cyril Street here. It's within 5K, so I can't go much further to go fishing, so I'll catch a few weeds.
Well, if you take your golf clubs to the pool, you're able to play, I think.
Yes, yes. I played a lot of golf with you. You do spend a lot of time in the water, so you should be very adept at it.
That's nasty, Jim. Spot on, but nasty.
Yeah. That's mean.
Imagine how bad it's going to be when we get back, Jim, after all this time off.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be terrible. There'll be shanks everywhere. But I just heard you before in the intro, finals coming up. I think we do this every year. We stress and worry about who's going to make the finals. And, yeah, you know, people go, oh, they'll just be making up the numbers. But every year, we look at every final and go, ooh, that's intriguing. That match has got something about it. You find something for every game. So, I'm excited. I'm big Kev. Can't wait for it.
Well, we love when you're excited.
Do you think, Jimmy, though, that being said, and I don't disagree with you, do you think there is a significant gap between the top four and the bottom four, or do you think that the bottom four can do some damage when you look at who's there compared to who's sitting there with a double chance inside the top four?
Yeah, they can certainly do some damage. I think the main concern about probably some of the sides is injuries. With West Coast, with no Elliot Yeo taking part, Collingwood, no Jeremy Howe taking part, I think that, you know, makes you a little bit apprehensive. They're still deep enough to go a long way, but Saints and Dogs, I think they can make a big charge at it.
Well, in fact, I'll throw it open to the crew. Rammer, I'll get you involved, obviously, because you're the main footy man around here when Jim's around. The game you're looking forward to the most, and we've got Luke Beveridge coming up not too far away, just by the way, so we can have a good chat about that game. But we've got Port Adelaide and the Cats on Thursday night, Brisbane and Richmond on Friday night, the Saints and the Dogs on Saturday afternoon, and Saturday evening the Eagles and the Magpies. Jimmy's outlined a few storylines from that. Rammer, which one are you most looking forward to at this time?
The Dogs and the Saints. I think the Saints, because they haven't been there for such a long time, and they've been such an exciting team to watch, just to continue to see their development as a team, and if it's real. And then the Dogs, I think from last year, they were beaten up in that elimination final against GWS, just to see how they respond. And we're obviously going to get to speak with Luke Beveridge shortly, probably to ask him that question. So that's the game that I'm most looking forward to. Obviously, the other ones are all good games, but I just think the storyline from the Dogs and the Saints will be the best this weekend.
Yeah.
Whitey, which one are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Brisbane-Richmond game because I think whoever wins that game will be the overwhelming flag favourite. I think whoever wins that game will play in the grand final and will be the team to beat. But like Rammer, I'm looking forward to the Bulldogs and Kilda game as well because I think the Bulldogs, to me, is the most intriguing team inside the eight because they're so different, and I've talked about that a lot before. And from a St Kilda's perspective, having missed for such a long period of time, it's great for their fans and for the club for them to be involved again.
Jim, you got one for us?
Yeah, how about you have a hat-trick, Half? St Kilda v Dogs for me. I just think... the Dogs, we've spoken about this, point of difference. I know we're going to speak to Bevo, but they've just got that host of midfielders. They can play with speed. They're good at contested footy, which is we know is what finals about. But also the Saints, they've got their own little point of difference with Marshall and Ryder in the ruck. King is another tall forward. And their ball movement, they're willing to go quick at different stages. And I think their back six have been a little bit underrated most of the year. I think Wilkie and Patton have been very good. They've taken good matchups. They've been very rarely beaten. So, I think the Saints v Dogs, for me, is the most interesting. Now, to Whitey's point, the winner of Brisbane-Richmond, I still don't see how Brisbane's addressed, how they're going to beat Richmond. Like, I've watched a lot of Brisbane, but they've got a certain unique style about them, but I just don't know whether it suits playing The Tiggies. I still think third and fourth, Geelong, Richmond are the favourites.
Yeah, well, I think on exposed form, that's probably about right. Although I must admit, I'm coming around to the whole Brisbane Port Adelaide thing. I'm a bit like you, Blacks. I'm surprised we're all on the same page here. The Bulldogs Saints game is the one I'm looking forward to most. It's a fascinating contest between two really interesting teams, and whilst they may not be premiership favourites, I think, as Whitey says, they could cause some damage. Like, their best is pretty good. Like, they could cause some damage if they get it right in the next little bit. And we've seen the Dogs get it right at this time of year before.
Yeah. I think, Jimmy, the reason I say that around the Brisbane-Richmond game is more because of where the finals are going to be played. So I still feel that Richmond plays the slippery conditions better than anybody else. And I think Brisbane, the fact that the grand final's to be played at Brisbane, if they were to win their first final, it means they've got a preliminary final at home, knowing the grand final's at home. So that's why I think that's the case. Whereas with the Bulldogs, again, it's that point of difference that I think means that they sort of stand out to me as the wild card.
Yep.
Just one reason will do. Just one reason will do. That's all we need around here on the Breakfast Club. Just the one reason to love us. That's okay. And that is 16 Reasons, Jim and Whitey and Rama. 16 Reasons from the movie Mulholland Drive. 2001.
We changed stations.
Extravaganza. No, we haven't changed stations. 2001.
You're a fan of that movie. This is Daniel really enjoys that movie, Mulholland Drive.
I've actually never seen Mulholland Drive, must admit.
Haven't you?
Why would I have seen Mulholland Drive and enjoyed it, Whitey?
Well, it's just a very strange movie. Some interesting sort of scenes, but it's a bit of a head spinner.
Right. Now, I've never seen Mulholland Drive, but this is the song from Mulholland Drive. We're playing that because one of our very own was a part of that. And Naomi Watts was a part of Mulholland Drive.
She played a big part
Drive.
In that role.
Did she?
Yeah, very big part.
All right. Yes, well, she's having a birthday today.
RSN's own Naomi Watts.
RSN's own Naomi Watts is having a birthday today. Now, let's not ever forget where she came from. Hey Dad in 1990.
Hey Dad, yes.
Hey Dad. Magnificent.
Oh, with Nudge.
With Nudge and the fat kid from Hey Dad, who nobody ever knew his name.
Betty? Just and Betty?
Arthur. Arthur, is that his name? Was it Arthur?
Yeah, Arthur.
All right, I'll take
it. Was Arthur.
It was Arthur.
What was the dog's name? Was there a dog?
Bouncer. No, that was from...
No, that was Neighbours.
Anyway,
we digress. Naomi's having a birthday today, Jim. Naomi is having a birthday. Let's not ever forget that. RSN Zone. How old... I'm going to go to you first, Jim. How old is Naomi Watts?
41.
I'm seeing some typing from Whitey on the phone. I'm concerned about you.
Yeah, it's cheap.
No.
41 for you.
Yeah.
Right, 41 for Naomi, says Jim. Rama?
Oh, she's either side of 50. So I'm going to go 49.
49, righto. 49 for Rama. Whitey, how old is Naomi Watts of Hey Dad fame?
I was going to go 49, so I'll go 47.
And man's done it again. Not on the number, but Rama's the winner. She's 52 today, Naomi. Jim, she'll be happy with you.
Yeah,
you're one of
very
those guys.
Happy.
You're one of those guys. It goes up to a 40-year-old. Gee, you don't look at that at 25.
Half gave it away when he's sort of Hey Dad in the sort of 1990. There's 30 years there.
Well, I've got to give you some info. I don't want to go in.
Yeah,
I like it. So Rama, victory again in the On This Day special, the birthday bulletin special. Naomi Watts, happy birthday to you. It's also Gary Ayres' birthday today. He's 60 today.
Is he?
Conan, you're 60. Happy birthday.
Your Harfords, your Whites, your Ramanaskises.
Well, if you go through your birthday...
He's one of the great men of football, Gary Ayres.
The Wattses, the Chilliches, the Duffs, the Webkeys, the McKinnons, the Hackinons, the Ayreses, the Rushes. Whose birthdays they are today on this day. Jim,
it's Mad Monday too, Harf.
It is Mad Monday. Happy Mad Monday, everyone. Yesterday we all woke up a little bit sluggish after September Club on Grand Final night, of course. It was Grand Final weekend on the weekend. Or what's supposed to be, Rammer. You would have been in action at September Club, just corporating yourself silly.
No. I don't do that. We go to my wife's auntie and uncle's house for grand final day every year and have a great day down there. I stay away from where you get seen. Huh? I'm not that type of like you.
Yeah, you get caught, right? He rolls in with no socks on. Yeah, you know, he's got like a real... He's got a pocket square hanging out.
The handkerchief.
Freshly polished bonds.
Real look at me sort of style.
Jim, extra I've seen you chest. On grand final day, Jim. I've seen you on grand final day, Jim, just with pocketfuls of cash after just fleecing some corporates for 4 minutes here and there.
So you should. You've got 3 premierships and a Norm Smith in your back pocket. I'll be fleecing too.
It's a cup.
Hey.
It's a cup.
Don't pretend it's not a significant win. My word, it was. Jim, your boys, the Cats, you've been on them heavy. You've been on them all year, particularly the back end of the year. You keep telling me Geelong by 10. They've got
5.
The power now. If I'm on Thursday, it's the power to kick it off. If I'm Kenny, your mate Kenny from Camperdown, I'm actually really pleased that we got pantsed the first time around against the Cats. I think as a coach, they're the best results if you're coming up against them when it really matters, because you can you can work out why and how and then try and rectify that. Now, it's not easy to turn it around, don't get me wrong, but I reckon going in, at least you'd back yourself in to be better, and whatever that means and how it ends up, you'd sort of, you know, the bounce of the ball might take you that way. But I reckon Kenny goes in with the best team in footy, as the ladder says, and a plan in place to try and defeat Geelong. They won't let them get anywhere near away with what they got away with the first time around, surely.
Oh, well, surely, and you hope not for Port Adelaide's sake, but I sort of agree and slightly disagree with you a little bit, Harvey. When you get beaten by the side during the year and the manner that they did especially, but just say when you get beaten, you want to see signs of actually what you do works well against the opposition. So you almost want to walk off the ground going, yeah, it's okay, we can do things that actually are really effective against this side. So I'll use one of my sides, for example, 2009, we come up against that powerful Saints side and, you know, one of the best games of footy ever, round 16, 17, well, I forget what round it was, both it's undefeated. Yeah, it's the best game of footy I've ever played in. You ask most Geelong players, it's the best game they've played in, even though it's a loss. Getting a little bit sidetracked there. But you walked off the ground and you went, what we've got is good enough. Now, it took Michael Gardner to take a big pack grab to separate us, really.
Yep.
So you walk off and you go, all right, well, we're not going into the next game thinking, geez, we've got to do a lot of things right. We hope this doesn't get away from us. I've spoken with Shane Crawford before about 2008, and he said when they played us in round 16 or 17 again, they walked off the ground and Clarko and a lot of the players were like, we did a lot right. We just made a few skill errors. Like, we're not afraid of what, you know, Geelong do. So as long as Port Adelaide saw that last game when they got trounced, as we called it, and thought, well, we did a lot right, but we didn't execute. And that's my worry with Port is I didn't see it enough just yet for them to, in that game, where they'd walk off and go, oh, it was just more skill errors or one or two players down. I thought they got beaten on system. And ball movement and the key way the Cats played their footy.
So that's the art of coaching, though, what you're talking about. You walk off the ground and your coach is able to really pick you up quickly and go, okay, if we had done this, and we hadn't allowed this, we probably win the game. I think what's keeping Kenny up at night at the moment, Whitey, is the Tom Hawkins matchup. I just think if Geelong's ball movement is quick enough, which we know is when they do move it quick, they look unstoppable, to have Jonas or Cleary or I think it's Leanart as the key defenders, they're all too small for Hawkins. So what I believe this already is that they have to be prepared to let one of the Cats forwards go and then allow one of their other defenders to sit back in front. They need to play Hawkins from behind, because as soon as Hawkins gets you in front of him, he's so strong, he holds his ground so well with those big bumper bars that he uses. So they need to double team Hawkins. So I'm not sure which forward they might let go might be Myers, potentially, that they sort of let go and let him go up the field. But I just don't believe right at the moment Ken has that matchup that he'd be comfortable with for Hawkins.
Now, Half, I said I sort of agree and disagree. The bit I agree with, and it's a bit what plays into what Rammer was saying with the setup, is if you've noticed in the last 6 weeks the amount of time Robbie Gray's come up and played in the midfield, yeah, and the midfield minutes of players. So I think they've added to their rotation. Now, if I'm Bell Park Ken, I'm saying we've got to dial up the pressure around the contest, because that's in recent years the Cats have sort of wilted a little bit under that around the contest. They've fumbled, yep, and haven't won that, which then the territory game becomes important. So if Port Adelaide get their hands on the footy and dial up the pressure, if they lose it, at least it gives, as Rammer is saying, a defender an opportunity to come over and help out on Hawkins. But just get it forward and play that squeeze and that trap in your half, and then you can, if the Cats do win it, you can force them slow because you've got that numbers pressing into your half. So that's what I'd be sort of overemphasising if I'm the Port Adelaide pair. It's the contest and lots of numbers around it.
The other interesting part for Port Adelaide is what to do with Charlie Dixon early in the game. When he played Geelong earlier in the year, I think he only had 3 or 4 possessions for the game.
Yeah.
And Harry Taylor just dominated him. Absolutely dominated. But what they did is they used Blitzards coming off as a defensive winger and was getting in front of his space. So I think early Ken needs to have Charlie higher up the ground. I would almost leave Robbie Gray in the goal square to start the game. Put some pressure on Jed Buse. Put some pressure on Mark O'Connor, whoever that matchup is. Because what will happen is if Dixon plays as the deepest forward early in this game, Geelong just roll back. They roll back and double and triple team him, and then you worry about where Port Adelaide's score sources will come from, because if Charlie doesn't mark it, he brings it to ground, and that brings in then obviously the power of smaller forwards. But if Geelong got the numbers around that contest, they're going to be able to take the ball away easily, and that's what they're able to do in that first half of that game. They doubled and triple teamed Charlie, were able to take the ball away and score up the other end with Hawkins through quick ball movement. Having Dixon up higher allows the ball to get over the back, over the top, and that brings in Robbie Gray into one-on-ones. Robbie Gray inside forward 50 has been dynamic this year. So Ken's got a couple of interesting decisions to make early in the game, Whitey.
Now, Jimmy, you've obviously been close inside the Geelong camp in a final under Chris Scott. Is he dining almost out on the fact that they've got the finals experience that Port Adelaide doesn't have? Is that the sort of coach he is, that he reminds his players of that advantage, or does he keep it sort of unemotional and he's more about the tactics of the game and not really sort of a rah-rah-rah sort of coach?
I think that's been Chris Scott's skill. He's got the mix of both. So I think he keeps it pretty, call it cold and tactical. But if he needs to be, he's got the emotion up his sleeve. He doesn't, you know, just play one or the other. He chops and changes. And so I think during the week, he keeps it pretty cold. There's a lot of video. He brings in his line coaches, obviously Matt Scarlett, you know, defensive structures and things like that. Whoever's in charge of setting up around the midfield sort of stuff, it's like, yep, everyone's on the same page. This is what we're doing. But at quarter time and half time, if he needs the emotion, that's when he pulls that card out. So he has that flexibility. He's not the fire and brimstone all the time, but he's not also the analytics coach.
It's going to be fascinating. You're right about Charlie Dixon's role too, Remmer. They all, yes, fold it back into his space. So if he plays high, he can take that advantage, yeah, away from the Cats.
Lead back a bit, yeah.
Yeah, lead back and let the smalls get the business a little bit deeper in the 50.
Well, that's what you need to do now against Harry Taylor. Like, you turn Harry Taylor around, as good a player as he is. He's, you know, his agility is obviously not there as it once was. So Charlie needs to move Taylor around as much as he possibly can.
Righto, we'll get to a break, 10 to 8. Great to have Jimmy Bartel with us on a Monday morning on The Breakfast Club. We're building up to week one of the finals, of course, on Thursday night. Port and Geelong kick it off. Two other games that we haven't spoken about, with the Tigers and the Lions and the Pies and the Eagles over there in Perth Town. A bit to get through. And there's some player movement conversations going around too. And I think Rammer is neck deep into it. Neck deep into it. He will be the most famous man through the AFL trade period all year. We might touch base with Rammer a little bit later on.
Dion's right to go. He's trained strongly. He trained strongly out here. We had a bit of a hit out 2 days ago, and he looked good to go. And it's just a testament to Dion's professionalism that he's got himself up to play. He's had a bit of a rough trot with, obviously, the syndesmosis and a few complications from that, but he's put himself in a great position to play footy.
There you go. That's Jack Riewoldt, the spearhead from the Tigers, talking about Dion Prestia and his return to the Tigers. Just what they need, boys. Another superstar coming back in for the finals campaign. How do you reckon it all fits in, Jim? The return of the Prestia types?
Oh, well, premiership player, best and fairest winner in a premiership player, you make room for those sort of players. And I guess we had that discussion with the Cats, how to get the balance. But I think you can bring Prestia back in because they've been able to add the likes of Shai Bolton in there. So he's a point of difference as well. So you can have him swapping over from half forward onto the interchange, out on the wing. So midfield depth, and Rama has touched on this before. It's your midfield depth and contest and your fundamentals in big final stand up. So, you want to get him back in. He's not going to be absolutely flying first game back, but if they win first final, another week, he gets another week of training and prep, ready for a prelim.
The interesting part, Half, is actually how much work he's done, because he hasn't played a game, obviously. So Richmond obviously will know his workload that he's undertaken through training. But you've got to be careful. I think just as important as Prestia is for Richmond, Jared Berry is just as important for the Brisbane Lions sure he's playing, because he's a really, really, because he's a bigger midfielder, which sort of Brisbane don't have a lot of. So they've got sort of Jared Lyons, but they need Jared Berry playing just for that little bit more depth.
Yep. I agree with that. Jared Berry's a very important player for the Brisbane Lions in that game, Whitey.
Well, we saw the situation with Shane Edwards having missed so much footy, how quickly he just came straight back into the team and made a difference. The difference was he wasn't injured like Prestia was.
Yeah, spot on.
But still just finding his place and being able to get back into a rhythm of a game, and the role that he played within a team that's been fairly settled over the last period of time. It's like he was never gone.
Yeah. Fascinating. The other game is, of course, West Coast and Collingwood, Jim. And Ross Lyon said something interesting, which is I've been thinking about a lot in the last 4 or 5 days, about the fact that they've had time to acclimatise. Now, they're in quarantine over in Perth, the Magpies, but they're not travelling the day before and having the body clocks out and having that one day at the buffet and all that sort of stuff. It's by the time they play the game, life will be...
You know I can get you.
By the time they play the game, life will be normal.
Apple crumble.
Life will be normal for them next week by the time it's ready for the game day, Jim. Does that help the Magpies?
Well, that's what you're drawing upon. You mentioned that with Chris Scott and things like that. What will coaches be drawing on? You'd be looking for every little angle you can, going, look, we've been here, we're settled, time zones, we're good to go, it's just in our company, all that sort of stuff. It could help. We'll soon find out. If they get torched by 8 goals in the first quarter, it could be a good excuse why it couldn't help being away from anything. But everyone's been on the road, really, apart from the Queensland team. So I think it balances out. Elliot Yeo, though, missing for West Coast now. Jeremy Howe missing. I think they start to balance each other out with injuries. Does Big McGovern get back, Rama? Any update on whether McGovern gets back in?
Yeah, I'm not sure about McGovern, but I think for the Pies, they've done this before. They've gone over to Perth and been able to win finals before, but they've done that with steel side bottom.
Yeah.
Without steel side bottom, I just think it's going to be a bridge too far for the Pies, unfortunately. And I say that is because side bottom can go forward and kick 2 or 3, or he can stay in the midfield and get 30 or 35. He's that sort of type of player. He's a finals player. He's always played really well in finals, except for the grand final against West Coast in 18, where he was tagged out of it by Hutchings. But I don't know. I think the West Coast injuries, yep, you're spot on with that. But just without side bottom, this might be too difficult for the Pies.
It is a fascinating injury list the West Coast have got. I mean, Cripps, Hutchings, who was very good from the finals campaign a couple of years ago, Kennedy, McGovern, Redden, Shuey, Vardy if they need him. They're all available for sort of that test selection or just not quite sure. It's a fascinating list and what they end up putting out there, Whitey.
But see, Redden has done well for them in finals in recent years because he's that sort of inside player. So when you've got Yeo, who also fits that that brief, there's two there, and then Shuey is your captain and your electric midfielder. It does put a lot of pressure on Tim Kelly, Andrew Gaff. And look, they've managed to go okay in recent times, but to me it's about the forward line. Ken Collingwood, with their defence, stopped West Coast with their tall forwards, and a lot of that depends on whether Kennedy plays.
West Coast could be the Bulldogs of 2016, where the Bulldogs had that bye, obviously, before the finals and were able to get a number of players back. West Coast could be the same. Obviously, we know Elliot Yeo's not going to be there for the remainder of the season, which is a big loss. But you're right, all those players are test. I believe Shuey's going to be fine. The other ones, I'm not 100% sure on yet.
Yeah, you go through the injury list for the Magpies. It says Ben Reed's 1 to 2 weeks. Might be a bit longer than that.
Yeah. He's retired.
He's retired.
So he's still on the injury list. He might be out for 1 to 2 weeks. Yeah.
Just one final one on that Collingwood West Coast situation, guys. That Nathan Buckley said, "Oh well, I know that you guys are going to look back on the last time we played West Coast, but we're not going to as a team. We're moving forward, and we're a lot different to what we were when we got beaten by them and beaten by them comfortably." Do you think that they will be referencing that? Round 8, it was 18-3 to 6 goals 9 to West Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a bit of it too is you've got to think if you're Collingwood and your match committee, go, surely they couldn't be that perfect again. You remember that game, they kicked 18 goals 3, but I think they only had about 32 inside 450s. It was the perfect date. Natanui, I think, the first quarter, they hit it down, went inside. It was like football training where you go, let's hit the full forward on the lead coming out of the goal square sort of stuff. It was a perfect day for the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't think Adam Simpson will be bringing that up, I'll tell you that much. He'll be taking the focus right off that game and worrying about what's in front of him. That'll be a damaging and a dangerous conveyance, no doubt, the Magpies on Friday night. Saturday night.
What West Coast did that day, they made Darcy more accountable. They made him actually, you know, have to sit on an opponent. They hit up his opponent quite a lot in that game. So I think the use of Darcy Moore this week for the Pies becomes really important. Without Jeremy Howell, obviously, they lack that intercept marking option. I think, obviously, Jordan Ruffhead will go to Josh Kennedy. It's who goes to Jack Darling. It's who gets that matchup. Do they say to Darcy Moore, it's your matchup, but Darling's a real hit-up type of player. Like, Moore can definitely go with him with pace, but he loves to drop off and he loves to try to intercept and be a nuisance in that defensive 50. So I think that's probably the matchup that Nathan Buckley will be thinking about most at the moment.
All right, it's going to be good fun watching it all unfold. And next Monday, Jim, when you're with us again, there's going to be a fair bit to dissect. Two teams will be gone. Two teams will be ready for a prelim. And four hanging on for their footballing lives. Looking forward to it, mate. Have a great week. We'll look forward to catching up with you next Monday on The Breakfast Club.
Can't wait. Thanks, man.
Great stuff. Jimmy Bartel, triple premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist. Cometh the occasion. And James was there doing his thing, like a few others and since before him. We'll get to the news. Johnny Bowden with the latest. There's a bit to talk about after that. And Soph Molyneux is going to join us as well from the Australian women's cricket team. Don't go anywhere. Don't forget Michael Felgate coming up after 8:30 on Racing Pulse. A massive weekend. Some big stories coming out of the action at Caulfield on the weekend. And he'll be all over that on Racing Pulse. And then Gareth cleaning up from 10:30 on RSN Central. Still to come on RSN 927.